Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the fifth edition of the Trans-Pyrenees Race, supported by our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS. Day three at TPR number five, and the leading riders now have the Mediterranean coast in their sights. First, they have to get their brevet card stamped at Control Point 4 in Proulon. The first rider to arrive at 9:54 a.m. was Tim De Vitter, Cap 111. Control Team 1 managed to get there in the nick of time to welcome him in.
My hike and bike yesterday was quite adventurous. I think I messed up big time there. It took me 3 hours. I passed like the, what is it called, Picada. Oh, man, like struggling with my bike, pushing it up and like carrying. It was it was not what I expected it to be. But now I have to decide if I go over Spain or if I go through France.
To the next parkour.
Yeah, I'm going over France because that's 1,000 height meters less, in theory. Yeah. I don't know if it's true, of course. I'm really afraid of the raid parkour, you know? Yeah. It's just like, it's not going to end.
I promise you it does eventually.
Yeah.
It has to.
I think I will just start crying or something.
Tears of joy?
No, I don't think so.
Tim is known for being an incredibly consistent rider. Thomas Bury, Cap 109, is also putting in a measured performance and has been in the podium positions for most of the race so far. He is second to arrive at CP4.
My plan is to get back to France tonight. And I really fancy see the sea as well. It's going to be nice. Mm-hmm. Enough mountains for a bit.
Just for a bit then?
Yeah, just for a bit, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's just the appetizer, right? The race starts in France.
How has it been so far?
Yeah, you know, pushing the pace a little bit. Huh? I guess it's a good race. I go to bed every night, I'm fucked up. Maybe less tonight, because it's flatter.
David Eyre, race director.
We awoke this morning in La Soya de Gel in Spain. We could see that Tim De Vitter and Thomas Bury were rapidly approaching Parkour 4, so we hopped in our car and drove down the valley road and arrived at CP4 here in Proulon. I'm ready to welcome the first riders arriving at the CP. So we've just had Tim and Thomas through now, both very efficient here at the CP, getting their cards stamped, immediately loading up the next route that they have and heading out to find a little bit of sustenance as well. Thomas remarking that he is looking forward to seeing the sea, but he knows that the race starts when they get to France with the raid parkour. So I'd say he's been racing quite hard already. So if the race really starts in France, I'm excited to see what the next few days hold for him and for all of the riders, really. We've got a lot of riders out on Parkour 4 at the moment as well. So this is a climb up to Clos de Cerdanya. It's a mixture of beautiful hiking trails, big open gravel roads, and is also used as a ski station in winter as well. So it's pretty high up, thin, rarefied air up there, but a really nice descent down and views from the top as well. So hopefully riders are enjoying it as much as the team did when we wrecked it. And then filled with motivation as the sun comes up and warms up that kind of chilly valley air for the rest of the day as they start to turn their wheels towards the Mediterranean.
Our volunteers make the race possible, but it's also a brilliant way for them to see and understand the challenge of TPR up close. David Howe is stationed at Control Point 4.
Why am I here? My son Joe did TCR this summer, and he was on the bursary. So I guess in some ways it's to say thanks for that, for you, for everything that you did for him. It's an amazing experience. You know, just we've been here for 2 days now, and just following the riders, and you convert the dots into real people. So when they come through those gates and they come up to the desk and you see what they've gone through in their eyes, it's amazing to see that and just to really kind of feel that and be part of the race. You know, and I think it's a brilliant way to be part of the race when you're not riding. Plus, you know, it enables everybody else to enjoy the race.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a good reason to do it, but you'll have gone from being a dot watcher at home.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
What was that experience like?
Again, a little bit surreal, to be honest. Yeah, we were listening to you interview the riders as they came through the checkpoint, and we were just talking about it amongst the volunteers, how, oh my God, we're watching the podcast in real life. Yeah, so it's really quite a surreal experience to see it through those different lenses, I guess. But converting it from being a dot watcher on a screen to actually being here and seeing the terrain and seeing the landscape and the villages that you go through and what it's like and the weather changing, and it just really kind of brings a race to life. It's amazing. A really good experience.
As Control Team 1 wait for more riders to arrive at CP4, Control Team 2 are further back in the beautiful Benasque Valley. They are going to spend the morning speaking to riders as they take on a steep hiker bike section that takes them around the Aneto Mountain, the highest point in the Pyrenees. In fact, later the team are going to try a little hiking too, minus the bike. Race coordinator, Andrew Phillips.
So I'm at the top of the Benasque Valley. It is 6:36 a.m. It's pitch black. Beautiful, starry night. We've got Orion in the sky above us, which is a sure sign that summer is changing to autumn. We've got lights on the hillside. Got the sound of a free hub going past as a rider splashes through the stream because he's not seen the bridge. And on the horizon, surrounding us on every side, are peaks of 2,500 meters, and I've had one pretty chirpy looking rider roll up next to me.
Good morning, Seven Jones, Cap 33.
Have you got any sort of, you got any knowledge of what it's going to look like up there? How well have you done your research?
So this was my actual initial plan, was to come up here, and then there's a sort of sketchy descent that when I was looking on all trails put me off, and so I sort of bailed on that idea and planned to go over the Bielsa instead, just because it was sort of a known quantity. But as yesterday came on, I could see other riders had come through here. I decided to change tack, revert to plan A. Slightly shorter day yesterday, avoid hiking anything techie in the dark. So yeah, I kind of know what to expect, and this is sort of obviously the most, I think, direct route to the park wall. So I'm glad to have reverted back to my original plan.
Andrew also spoke to James Windross, Cap 59.
Maybe I'll just ask you quickly about what happened to you yesterday on parkour 2. So
Yesterday parkour 2, I had 8 punctures.
8? I thought it was 9 punctures.
9, 8, I lost count in the end.
Yeah, but who's counting after 5?
Fawns, pinch flats, filled, tubes, everything.
So parkour was harder than expected, and it slowed you down.
Yeah, it took me a good 9 hours to get through it. I was pretty close to scratching. So today is a big push to see if I can get to the next checkpoint before the cutoff, which is tomorrow morning, I think.
That's right. Well, I'd best let you go then so that you can go and push on for it. Good luck. Enjoy the hiker bike. It's going to be beautiful up top today, I think.
Yeah, thanks. I'm probably still on the road, though. But yeah, should be good. Thank you.
Helga Meyer, Cap 53, is also on the hiker bike section, but has some experience of the area, having ridden nearby before.
Are you staying warm on the hiker bike?
Yeah, I stay warm on the hiker bike.
Have you enjoyed it so far?
Yeah, it's brought me a little bit.
It's hard, but it's beautiful, right?
Yeah, but I start too early. It was so fucking cold and windy, and then I have to get a short nap in the parking place down, and then I start now. It was so cold.
Do you want to describe the scene for us?
It's the Benasque Valley. It's beautiful. A little bit the last one of the last glaciers on the east side, the west face of these mountains there. Where's Aneto? I think this is Aneto.
This one to the south?
Yeah, this is Aneto. It's the highest peak in the Pyrenees.
You know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Have you been here before?
on the other side of the other valley in the east.
So you knew what to expect from this hike bike?
Yeah, so it's hard.
You've still got a smile on your face though.
Yeah, but it's also fun.
Elena Brandner, Cap 36.
Hi.
You've always got a smile on your face.
I try to.
How are you finding the hiker bike?
Steeper than expected. But I'm so happy that I didn't do the alpine climbing. Yeah.
The alpine climbing, yeah, the other route slightly south.
This was my original plan, but yeah, I think this one is quite better.
Yeah.
So, mood is good.
And how's your body feeling from pushing your bike up?
Good, yeah. I had a good sleep tonight and I ate a super nice lasagna. This helped a lot.
Being well-fueled, having a good meal, yeah, makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, always, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So beautiful.
The sun's just come up and is starting to hit the top of Pico Aneta and the other mountains behind us. And that's this really beautiful pink colour. Yeah.
Race reporter Hannah continues to grab riders for a quick chat as they trudge upwards with their bikes. To give you a sense of how difficult it is, Helga Meyer offers a direct comparison.
We've just reached the top of the climb and the wind is picking up quite a bit. And we can feel that the air is definitely thinner here because we're getting a bit out of breath trying to keep up with these guys who are carrying their bikes.
It's harder than Coco claims.
Coco Glams.
Yeah, Coco Glams on to divide the hard hiker bike section. It is so hard here.
This is coming from a very experienced man. Have you just been putting on some layers at the top, putting on all your extra waterproofs, having some sweets? That is a big bag of sweets. Was it full when you started?
No.
And not only is it getting a bit windy, we've got the clouds rolling in and a bit of drizzle up here now. So, tough conditions, but hopefully the riders will pass out of it pretty quickly.
Paolo Capozzi, Cap 90, is more prepared than most for the hiker bike.
Actually, it's quite good, shoulder training for to push the bike. I feel like this.
I'm not sure you want that kind of training mid-race, though.
No, this is true, but I'm a big proponent of strength training, even for... For cyclists, studies show that strength is one of the most biggest predictor of longevity. So I'm a big proponent of strength training. And, bike racing, you get probably stronger legs, but you lose muscles everywhere else. So I didn't mind getting a little bit of shoulder training now. I will get it later, I guess. But hopefully I won't need my shoulders later.
And when you're in the middle of the race, that strength training that you've been doing previously, is that paying off with your upper body so that you're not getting so tired?
Yes, definitely. Especially with the legs, I keep saying this to everybody. I think everybody should do a little bit of strength training. I used to suffer from back pain and IT band pain, Achilles pain and everything. Instead of strength training regularly, just all gone. It's a bit tricky to mix strength training and cycling because, after you do deadlift and squat, the next day you can forget about doing more than zone one. But if you mix it up nicely, it's actually quite good.
Jean-Christophe Huche, Cap 61.
I love that everyone coming up here has a massive smile on their face.
Yeah.
Maybe to deal with the slight insanity of carrying your bike over a mountain, but it's also pretty beautiful.
I don't know if it's a coping mechanism or something like that, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe. here it's quite fine because up there it's a bit windy and chilly. So you're going down to civilization, so it's fine. So it's just a peace of mind like this.
Have you considered the kit that you've brought with you to make sure that you're all right climbing over a mountain?
Just this shoe bag to put the saddle bag on.
Oh, that's a clever idea. So you've got a drawstring bag, a lightweight bag on the back that's carrying a saddle bag.
I think the bike is easier to handle like this. So, yeah, and it's less weight. At least you feel like it's less weight. So,
we have a number of pairs riding and hiking at TPR number 5, including Marcus Barden and Timo Kellner, caps 137 A and B.
You look quite well prepared. You've got some mountain bike shoes with a slightly more flexible sole.
It can walk in them.
You've got some Gore-Tex waterproof trousers and jacket and gloves, like big mitten gloves over your other gloves.
Even got another layer of gloves because experience like up in the mountains that can get dangerous quite fast.
Yeah. And you want to make sure your hands are working.
Yes, exactly.
Cool. But you've enjoyed the views.
Yeah, I mean, the sunrise on the other side of the mountain was spectacular. And we saw the remaining parts of the glacier up there. There's not much left.
It's quite sad. Did you go past the sign that had the images of it from 1990?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so. Where it was just so much bigger, and now it's just this little patch of ice under Pico Aneto.
Because of the changes in altitude and time of year, the Transpyrenees encourages riders to be ready for all types of temperature and weather conditions. Having the right kit and keeping it in good condition is one of the challenges of the race. Elena Brandner, cap 36, has now made it to the top of the hiker bike.
Ah, good.
Have you got any extra layers to put on?
Sorry, extra layers?
Yeah.
No, not really, but I put now everything on.
What happened to your shorts here? I can see lots of holes in them.
No, it's such a bad situation. I washed them and put it on top of here, and then they got into the brakes.
Oh, I saw them dangling off your bag yesterday, and I thought, "Ooh, that looks a bit ropey."
Yeah, but I'm so happy that they didn't crash because I realized it and was like, "Oh shit!" But I think I can use them with these leg warmers.
They're still covering your legs
afterwards.
At least the important part of the bibs is still there.
Yeah, that's true.
Afternoon on day 4 at TPR5. Control team 1 are still at CP4 and they're expecting the next couple of riders to arrive soon. Also waiting for them is Pauline Frankenreich, another one of our race volunteers.
I've been following the races for the past years. I'm still pretty new, and I just find it fascinating that people are actually like capable to do these distances, and also not only like the physical aspect of it, but also the mental aspect, the preparation that goes into that, and just sort of getting a bit of a behind the scenes experience is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And getting to see the riders coming in is pretty cool to watch.
So it's like you're doing a little bit of research in a way.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I'm not specifically here because I might do this myself, but I just find it really interesting and inspiring to watch people do this, and that they have the courage to actually participate in these events. Yeah.
At 12:33, Jamie Loudon continues his strong race by becoming the third rider to arrive at Control Point 4. He spoke to race reporter Stuart Downing.
Have you been since we saw you last?
Quite good. Yeah. It's just really hard, I think. it's just the gravel is hard. I think that loads of people are going to really find it.
Yeah.
It's a big trip. Yeah. It's significantly harder than been in the past. I think there's going to be a lot of tired people around.
Maybe I'm looking too far ahead here, but you might be one of the few people who will be looking forward to turning around.
I'm looking forward to turning around. I'm looking forward to doing some road climbs and just like finding a rhythm and just sitting there waiting for it to finish. The gravel section we just did, I've done it before. So I did it El Piri last year. I know it's just hard work. It's just like fighting and fighting and fighting and back row skidding. Then you get to the top and then it's just like bumpy all the way down. Just want to get there really.
Julian Rossard, cap 68, and Lucas Stripmatter, cap 76, arrive at CP4 in quick succession, shortly followed by Thomas Rongen, cap 119, and Maxime Agut, cap 80. These first seven riders have now broken away from the rest of the pack to form a leading group, all riding within just a few hours of each other. It's taken a few days for the first mention of McDonald's this year, but Stuart spoke to Thomas, who, having claimed his brevet card stamp, is now in search of those golden arches.
What are you looking forward to now?
Ghost. Actually, I'm really looking for a McDonald's. I was in Lourdes, but like the McDonald's was quite faster from the route. I was looking for McDonald's. So it didn't work out, but hopefully maybe at the coast. It's a touristic place, right? So,
what are you going to order at McDonald's?
Everything veggie. Okay. So nuggets, hamburger, wrap, fries. Twice, I guess. I was already thinking about, like, is it good to eat more hamburgers or eat more fries? What do you think?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm not a nutritionist. No, I would say probably hamburger.
Yeah.
Well, fries are fried. Do you want to eat a lot of oil? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
You're right. Two hamburgers then. Maybe a milkshake. I can send you a message when I'm there, and then you can have like a romantic dinner with the two of us.
Control Team 2 have moved on from the Banas Valley and stationed themselves in Aros at the start of Parkour 3. Riders will enjoy another stunning climb that takes them high above the valley and into the forest for yet more action on the gravel. They'll also be up at around 2,000 metres, so they'll have to be ready for some cold temperatures and changeable weather. Sophia Ganzerboom, Cap 106, is one rider with all this ahead, although the hiker bike is still fresh in the memory for now.
How are you doing?
Good. I mean, the hiker bike was brutal. Like, I thought once I'm up, it's fine. And then we just, like, you know, you go slowly down. But it was, like, even worse going down with your bike. I cannot recommend.
Especially if you're just, like, trying to maintain your footing.
Exactly.
And you've got the extra weight of the bike. It can be a real challenge.
Yeah. And I just slipped. And then down in the valley, I realized I had a banana in my pants. Now, like, it's all gross. And that's why I actually stopped. I wanted to wash it here. It's a bit gross.
But physically, you're fine.
Yeah, my knee hurts. But it's on and off. Yeah. So I hope still that it's going to last. I really love the view. All the views. I mean, like yesterday, the descent from the Parkour 2 was just amazing. Like, that's why I came here for.
Late afternoon and further east at Control Point 4, Charlie Bratt, Cap 22, rolls in to get his brevet card stamped.
Yeah, it's been a good day so far, actually. I think I realised why everything unravelled yesterday. And that's because I never bought any Haribo. So I've bought 4 packs today, because I'm sure that'll sort things out. So, although it was a route planning error, I blame it on the Haribo. So, all good. I think legs feel pretty good today and pretty happy how things are going. Obviously, there's a race up the road, which I'm very mindful of. But yeah, just keep plugging away, see how close we can get.
You're looking forward to getting to the coast today?
I think that sounds great, doesn't it? And it's like, and the other nice thing is, like, we've zigzagged around so much. It's been beautiful, but like, we've zigzagged here, there, and everywhere. Obviously, on the way out, that, like, with the raid parkour looming on the way back, it's a straight line. It's like as straight a line that you could possibly get, you know? So, like, that's in some ways, like, although that is quite a daunting segment, parkour, should I say. It is like, I'm just sort of telling myself, like, it's the fastest way home, isn't it? So, like, you know, that's the ideal scenario almost. So, no, we'll see how we go. But I'm going to crack on.
Further back, Control Team 2 have repositioned themselves once again.
We're at the top of Parkour 3 at the moment, and it's bitingly cold. We've had a little bit of snow coming down occasionally, sometimes sleet, and a lot of wind, and the clouds kind of been rolling in and out quite quickly, and at the moment it's gloriously sunny. We've got a load of horses up on this meadow at the top, and just these glorious sweeping bends as the track descends back down to the valley. We've seen quite a few riders up here, and we've seen some of the leading women go through, and the kind of chaotic nature of the routes between Parkour 2 and Parkour 3 have really changed how things are standing in the field. There's about 6 or so different options that riders might have taken, some on road, some some over hike, bike, climbs, and it's not really that clear which are the most effective routes at the moment, but some of the riders who went via Benasque, we were seeing this morning, some of them seemed really happy with their choice. They thought they'd saved a bit of time, saved themselves a lot of distance, while others, I think, found it a lot slower than they expected. And if they weren't prepared for that hike or bike, and if they didn't have the right shoes for it, etc., they might have lost a bit of time in comparison to some of the other routes. So it'll be interesting looking at the analysis of the tracking, but yeah, at the moment it's hard to tell which have been the best options.
Hannah speaks to Adrian de Glees and Gilles Hauser, riding as a pair, caps 131A and B.
You've got a little card tucked into your spokes on your front wheel.
Oh, yeah.
What does it say?
It's one from Switzerland. It's La Rache. It's the race across Confédération Helvétique, which is a bit like the race across Switzerland, but by bike messengers. So it's another one on the national day, from the easternmost point to the westernmost, and the first at the swimming pool wins.
So, awesome. Yeah, and why do you tuck that into your spokes, just as a souvenir?
That's the way they put it, and I just left it since then. I think it's been holding on for now a good 3 years, so pretty surprised as well.
Our riders will typically have a bivy bag with them so they can catch a few hours sleep on the road. When taking part in an ultra race, it's perfectly normal for them to stop and rest somewhere comfortable, like a grassy clearing, bus stop, or graveyard. But sometimes after a long day in the saddle, what a rider really needs is a hotel room and some time alone to recuperate. Joost Klarenbeek, cap 66.
How are you doing?
Well, I was just telling you about the weirdest night ever. Yeah. I was in Lourdes, it was weird. No, but honestly, I just called them ahead from Portalette. I was like, do you guys have a room and do you have 24-hour like check-in? They were like, sure. You will get a room. You will get a room. So I ride into Lourdes at like way too late, like 2:30 in the morning. Have you ever been to Lourdes?
Yeah. Strange place.
Isn't it like one of the strangest? I thought like it was a mix of Chungking mansions in Hong Kong and like a theme park. It's super weird. Anyway, got a room, I open it, and they tell me, oh, bring the bike, whatever. I get in there, there's a person in the room, in the bed. Like, no kidding, there was someone sleeping in the bed. And I'm like so flabbergasted, you know, it's like 3 a.m. and I've like ridden my bike for a whole day.
And there's just one bed in this room?
Yeah, and then I went back and I went like storming down. I was like, guys, there's a person in this room. So yeah, wonderful. Well, so, yeah, it's so weird, man. Honestly, like, it's weird in general. But when you've ridden your bike for 14 hours, it's so strange. And you also just really want to sleep.
Having now moved to the end of Parkour 3, Hannah and Control Team 2 speak to Joanna Raminska-Petersic, one of the fastest women in the race to this point.
I hoped the progress would be, a bit faster. Yeah, and I hope for... I aimed for like 300 kilometers per day, and with those parkours and hiker bikes, I would need to be a much faster rider to do that. So yeah, but it just teaches you some humility, probably.
It's just about moving forward, isn't it? And
it
spending
is.
Time on the bike and
yeah,
not stopping
but
too much.
It's increasingly painful. So yeah, but. Fortunately, the scenery is so beautiful that it makes up for you know, the difficulty, for frustration, pain, and everything. Yeah. So yeah.
Can you tell me what the parkour? So you've just completed Parkour 3. Can you tell me what that was like?
It was pretty easy by this race standard, because it was totally rideable for me. So I stopped only to take pictures because it was so beautiful up there. So yeah, by far it has been the easiest one, and I hope this stays this way.
As evening draws in and the light begins to fade on day three, here's race director David Eyre with a quick summary of events.
I'm sitting in a rocking chair with the
French doors open onto the balcony, looking out down the Cerdanya Valley. It's very picturesque, very nice. The top 10 riders in the race at the moment have all passed over Parkour 4 and through CP4 today. To get there, they have to go up a pretty steep climb. So it's about 10 kilometres long, an average of around 6% after they turn off the main road. And that's just to get to the start of the parkour. From there, the climbing certainly doesn't stop. And they have a pretty rough gravel track taking them up, a mixture of kind of farm tracks and double track and some compacted gravel. But it's a lot of climbing in the first half of the parkour before riders emerge onto this huge plateau with a view out over the Cerdanya Valley, a kind of 270-degree panoramic view from out there, which is really spectacular. And from there, they ride along the top with these sweeping views, surrounded by dairy cows who are grazing in the fields, dense pine forest, and today probably one of the bluest skies I've ever seen, hardly a cloud to be seen anywhere. There's then a really fast descent down from there, initially on gravel until you reach the refugio at the top, and from there it's paved all the way down to the CP as well. So the top 10 have all come through, all pretty efficient as well. While they've been here, quick turnarounds, there aren't rooms or a restaurant for people to enjoy or take some rest in here, so everyone's chosen to press on towards the Mediterranean coast. And we can see already that Tim De Vitter is about to hit that coastline as we speak. So first rider to reach the Med and the halfway point of TPR number 5, which is a really exciting race milestone.
Join us in our next episode, when for our leading group, the second half of the race really gets underway. They'll be hitting the Mediterranean coast before turning back and heading towards the iconic Raid Parkour and the long journey back west. Joanna Rominska-Petersic and Nicole van Battenberg are also likely to feature in what has been a close race between the fastest women. Can any of those riders break away and build a gap? There's still so much to come from this year's TPR. You can read Stuart's daily race reports from the road on the Lost Dog website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS.